Welcome back to today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm your host, Doug Kameen, and today I'm talking with Yash Murali, who is currently the Chief Technology Officer at Therabody. Welcome to the show, Yash.
Thank you for having me, and excited to be here.
Yeah, so you're on the West Coast in San Diego. I think since we had a little conversation before we started, on the recording of this here. But first of all, you're in San Diego. It's sunny. It's warm. The rest of us here, we're starting to get into the fall. It's getting cooler here and stuff like that. What is it like there? Am I right that it's sunny and warm there right now?
It's like the best place. I mean, I feel like I've lived across the country, like multiple places, but then San Diego, you can't complain. It's always 70s during the day and then 60s at night. So it's like, you can't complain. It's nice, bright and sunny, beautiful weather all year long. And same in like where my office is too in Los Angeles. It's probably like very close to it back in San Diego.
Uh-huh. So do you move back and forth between, I mean, you live in San Diego, but you have an office in Los Angeles. Do you have an office in San Diego too?
No, our headquarters are based in Los Angeles. So I travel back and forth. So I work from home remotely a week, and then I travel to the office like at least 3 times in a month. So I'm here.
Okay. Nice. So can you tell us a little bit about your role as Chief Technology Officer? So a CTO and a CIO, and this is probably a great discussion to have, setting the table here. There is a difference between the CTO role and the CIO role. Could you share with us like what your perspective is on the differences between those roles?
I think like, the CIO, at least in my opinion, I used to be a CIO and a CTO. So this one's like, I would say it's a combination of the two. Like more like a CITO. But
that's my current job. I'm currently a CITO by title myself.
Yeah. So the CIO, I feel like, brings value when it comes to, of course, technology related, but more like I always, they get perceived as like the back end side of people where they manage infrastructure, traditional IT systems and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think the CTO, there's also like the technology aspect of it where I'm in this role, I also like I'm involved in the front end of the business, like e-commerce, mobile app, and also like, how can I use technology to make a difference, to grow revenue, to drive growth in that type of initiative? So that's where I feel maybe there's a subtle difference between what a CTO versus a CIO. And at least my role here is.
Yeah, I love thinking about like for me when it's funny for me this just came up at one of my executive team meetings at work where not that my peers don't already know that there's distinct difference, but sometimes it comes up in a conversation that we're having and stuff, and I was like, well, the CTO hat is a more of a strategy hat, if you will. Like I'm thinking about if this organization needs these tools or this has this goal, here's the tools that can help with that. And if this group wants to solve this problem, I'm called in to help them sit and be like, help me figure out what's going on here with this. But then on top of that, not just help them solve that problem and bring in like the technology or the tools that are there to bear on it, but to know how it fits into the larger strategy of what we're doing. Like that's the CTO hat to me.
That's absolutely right. I think we have a seat at the table. I mean, we are here to provide value to the business. And a lot of times it's like, hey, just suggesting tools is an option, but also like, having been part of the strategy discussions on like, hey, how do we collectively use technology to drive growth? And it could be like providing, hey, this time around it's AI, like how do we use AI as an example to drive our business revenue? A lot of times our business users hear this, of course, through their peer networks and everything is like, they hear all these buzzwords, but they don't understand like how it can be sort of harnessed and incorporated within our business processes. And that's where I feel like, we can come in and help, train their thought process and like help them think differently, so we can then go and execute. They come up with a strategy roadmap and then how we can execute this to help drive the business.
Yeah, so let's get real for a second here on AI, because I'm having this discussion too inside my organization, and we're coming up with strategies to figure out how these tools are useful in our space, you know, because I think that's the big thing. Like, you see all this hype. There's, you know, the hype is like, oh, look, every paralegal in the country is going to be replaced by AI, which, I mean, hey, maybe that's going to happen. But I don't employ paralegals, you know, like our company is not full of paralegals. Our company is full of people to do other stuff. Same with yours. So, you know, I'll ask out of curiosity, what tactics are you trying to use to help understand how these tools, these new AI tools, all of them collectively, just the spectrum, not, you know, and if you want to drive into a specific, that's fine too, but like, how do you figure out how they're useful for your organization?
So I always feel like, you know, whoever you talk to outside, like, AI is being thrown around as if anything can be done with AI. I mean, I don't think that's true. I think you have to be a little more organized and methodic in the way you approach the topic. And then the way I think about it is, like, we have internally, you know, as you know, stewards of the business, we know, you know, how, where our gaps are in the business processes, and then where AI may be applicable in how we can incorporate that in our business process. So I think one of the things I did was, like, you know, I don't have answers to everything. So I conducted an AI workshop internally where we invited all the business users from every group and just sat down and let's just, you know, throw ideas, put ideas together. Let's brainstorm on where we feel our biggest gaps are and where, based on your thought process, you feel AI may be applicable. So we basically came up with this laundry list of items where we felt AI, hey, we can use AI. And then we then go and curate that list and then come from like a list of 100, make it a list of 15. And then based on that, like, come to a list of top 5 items where we feel like the biggest bang for the buck, where AI may be incorporated in our business. And I think we are at a point where we have a very good understanding on, just as an example, like, AI can be used, you know, your traditional productivity improvements, like your co-pilots and your ChatGPTs and stuff like that, to do, like, to take care of all the mundane work. Meeting notes and all that type of activity. But then a little more from a revenue driving standpoint, how could you use it on your e-commerce site? How will you enrich your experience on the mobile app using AI? You know, think about those things. And then and now we have a list of initiatives where we feel we can apply AI. So now that was the first part, strategizing on how do you incorporate it. The second part of it is, how do you execute on that? So now that we may need expertise, or we may need industry experts to come and help us out. And which is where we are currently. We can execute some of that internally, but then some of it we may need external help.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime.
Yeah, in my organization, I'm in a human services field, and what ends up happening for us is I guess I get different runways. So we're setting up a collaborative learning project. So we're actually right on the cusp of putting out the solicitations as you and I are talking about this. But probably by the time it's published, that'll be out inside my company. But inviting members from a cross section of our organization to sit. For we'll fund the tools, and then we'll create a collaborative set of sessions where people come together. They say, hey, I think I can use it for this. We're going to fund it on their accounts, you know, put Copilot on or other tools or whatever the case may be, and then get them together over the course of several months to talk through, like, what did you learn? Was it useful? Did it actually turn out that way for you? Like, the way you talked about it, or like, hey, I found this cool thing out, and then they share that with the rest of the group. And then we really take that as a learning and stuff like that. So that's the approach I've been taking. It dovetails very closely with the things that you're talking about as well. Just trying to get people together and figure it out. Cause it's so hard. And the hype is that like, you know, I don't even know how, you know, what hyperbolic way to describe it, but essentially it's going to do everything for you, as you said. Yeah. And it really isn't. Really, these things are just add-ons for everything else that you currently do, some better than others, and you really got to figure out where that is.
And the key to it is, like, you can do more with less. I think that's the key. It's not like, hey, it's going to take away like your job, but the thing is, like, you can do more with what you currently have is the concept that people need to get in their mind. I mean, right now there's so much stigma. It's like, oh, it's going to take my job. I mean, that's not what it is for. It is to enhance your job so you can focus on higher value tasks and let AI handle all the low value tasks, which you don't have time to get to, or, you know, it's not adding as much value as, you know, as what you're here for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So just ask a little bit about your current role at Therabody. Can you tell us a little about, like, what does Therabody do? You know, what can you share with us? Tell us a little more.
So to begin with, like, Therabody is one of the, I mean, I feel like amongst all the companies I've worked at, it's one of the great brands that's out there. We specialize mainly in recovery products. We are basically pioneers in what's called percussive massage therapy, which is, if you've seen those, one of those triangular shaped massage guns.
Yeah,
it's we basically, Therabody is the inventor of that. Like, so we invented that. We made the first prototype. This was the company was formed in 2017, fairly young company.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, our founder who founded the company came up with this idea because he had met with this motorcycle accident, and then he felt like, hey, I need something to relieve he had pain in his lower back, and then he needed something to relieve that pain without taking pain medication, which is so essentially he came up with this idea. Is like, and he was a trained chiropractor, so he came up with this idea. It's like, hey, why can't I take this technique that I use and then convert that into a device? And then from there, we launched the Theragun, which was our main marquee product. And then from there, we've now expanded to a wide array of, we have over 100 products across various domains. So, but mainly around recovery. So that's what Therabody does. We are a recovery company. We help various, like, different groups of segments of people with recovery. We just recently launched what's called a beauty line. So it was geared towards athletes. Then we sort of expanded it to a broader audience. Now we have a separate beauty line to help with you know, like, your skin elements to it. So anyways, that type of stuff. So that's what we in the background, we are a traditional consumer electronics consumer goods company.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm thinking, When I go to my physical therapist, you know, and I like, hey, you know, my shoulders hurt. This is the Therabody product is like that thing, that gun that they bring out that, like, it's like punching to help, but it's a bam, 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 you know, that type of thing.
That is exactly right. And we have various side kinds of those. So I think depending on the, like, you know, level of massage you need, but essentially it's just that what you should.
Yeah. Yeah. Now for me, like, I cannot help it. Like, it tickles me every time when he does it. I'm like, even if he does it on the side of my arm, I'm like, dude, like, come on, man.
So you would be surprised, like, all the pro athletes swear by it. They always carry one with them, especially, you know, when you have a hard day of workout and all that stuff. Like, so it relieves any muscular pains you have, or even we have this thing called jet boots, which is one of our, it's a pneumatic compression boots, which we've had it for a while. So those were geared towards, like, runners or anyone who's on their feet a lot. So people swear by it. And every marathons we have, you'll see a lot of folks using it right after to recover from the marathon run.
Nice. So I'm going to dig back in your history a little bit so we can give our listeners a chance to understand a little bit about, like, how you became a leader, because you've been in the space. You've been a CIO. You've been a director of IT and CTO for quite a long time. And it's a really well-known brands and companies out there. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, your professional history? Like, how did we get to now with Yash here? Like, can you tell us the story?
So I when I came to the US, I came here to study. So I'm electronics and computer science major. I went to Texas A&M. Mm.
Grew up in Austin, by the way. This is Longhorn country for me.
I know. both great schools.
They are both excellent schools. That is very true.
Yes. So when I graduated, I think since a kid, I was always drawn towards technology. I think that's been my passion. That's always, more technology and problem solving. I come from a family of engineers. Like it was sort of like ingrained in me. When I grew up, it became like a thing where it's like, for me, technology, engineering was like sort of the dream that I wanted to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came here, my first job, I started my career off as a data engineer, individual contributor, more towards coding. I learned programming, of course. I think that's where I started. And then eventually, over a period of time, I had this, and I do it even today. I think one of the things I always do is like, never like stop learning, never stop where you are and think that it's enough, especially in technology, because I think we were talking earlier, things change so much.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stay in tune with what's going on out there. So I somehow had that even when I started my career. I started off as a database developer. Then I felt like, I feel like I need to do more. Then I learned different tools, different platforms. And over a period of time, I basically broadened my skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So then from data engineering, I went to application development, which was a front end, like took over CRM applications, ERP applications. And then eventually from there, took over infrastructure, because I didn't want to stop where I thought like, hey, a lot of people, it's like, oh, these many applications, I'm happy. I can just grow in that particular, area or field. For me, it was more like, hey, how can I broaden my skill set even more? And that's where starting from data analytics, went to CRM, went to ERP, went to infrastructure. And then eventually I got my first break at Jenny Craig, where I became their head of technology, their VP of IT,
mm-hmm.
where I oversaw the entire technology department, which was a fairly large department at that time. It was like about 80 people.
Wow.
Yeah. We were a big company. Six predominantly retail, diet, health, and wellness based company.
Mm-hmm. At the time.
And then over a period of time, that was my first private equity go around. So was introduced to the private equity owners.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I had this considered like, I'll call it a knack, because there's a way you have to work when you're with private equity. It's very different than when you're working in a corporate environment in a publicly traded company. Private equities are very fast paced and a lot of times when private equity gets in, it's a turnaround situation, right? Like the companies mm-hmm. are not doing well. That's why they're being bought out. So I felt like that's where I found my niche, where I feel I can go in and turn things around quickly and make the company, like eventually make the company healthy, optimize, make it efficient. And then the private equity company they are successful in their venture as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's a great segue. So like, we talked before we got on, we started our recording about you're really engaged in a lot of this private equity work right now and helping companies with turnarounds and other stuff like that. And it is, it's super different to be like a technology person working in that space than it is in some of these others. My background is in corporate, some corporate, mostly nonprofit corporate and government administration of IT. And that's like the pacing is totally different in terms of how you the expectations of results, the turnarounds, just even thinking about how you and I described our approaches to AI, I could think about the differences there. You're like, hey, I convened a focus group. We talked it through. We came up with some lists. We banged out some stuff that we were going to do. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing a 6-month study. your company would be halfway to being sold by that time,
That's so true. And sort of somewhere in me, I enjoy the fast pace, quick decision making, because a lot of times you have to be very creative, and it challenges me too. And I would say, like, going back to like the analogy, like, you know, as since I was a kid, like, you know, the problem solving aspect, there's a, like, as I said, like, when you're in a turnaround situation, there's a lot of challenges that you got to overcome. And part of it, like, when I look back, I feel like, yeah, I think that's what I enjoy, you know, solving problems and helping these companies that are, and, you know, making it a successful venture, not just for, and also for the, and a lot of these are like, these companies that are going through the situation are like great brands that require to be, you know, that need to be out there. So anyways, I think preserving the brands, preserving the culture while making these turnaround situations, I think while making the change or shift in culture, I think it's what I feel like I'm at least over a period of years, I feel I'm good at it now.
Mm-hmm. So this tees up some great questions about leadership and what's important and what's important to you in these spaces. Because many of the people, in the interviews that I've done, I'm sure we've had, you know, there's like 300 episodes on the podcast. So I'm sure we've talked to people who've been involved in private equity at different intervals. But I know when I've done my interviews with other folks, that's an infrequent, you know, run-in. And knowing that there's such a difference there, what is the leadership difference that you see? So I'll ask a two-sided question. Maybe I'll just don't tee it up here. One is, what's different in the leadership in the private equity space, and, you know, with the pacing and things like that? And then two, what leadership skills and what pieces do you focus on to build great teams in that type of environment?
Got it. So I think from a, you know, leadership standpoint, in what makes my job easier, even though the situation that you're in is a tough one, mm-hmm. is that you have primarily two goals. One is you have to grow the revenue. The second is you have reduced costs. A lot of times the companies, it's out of balance. That's why they're in the situation they are. So for me, I think from a leadership standpoint, it's very easy for me to communicate goals to my team. It's like anything that we do, it has to help drive business or help manage or make us efficient. So one of the things, as long as we are aligned with those two main objectives, I think we're in good shape. So I think that's, I would say, like, the biggest difference between. The third thing is, like, if we have time from those two, is like, hey, how do we add these? How do we enrich our business? How do we add value? How do we do all these other great things that we want to do to improve our technology stack? Mm-hmm. I think those will be like the immediate third pillar, but always the driving factors are, how do we grow our revenue, and how do we make us efficient from a processes, procedures? Is there a wastage? How do we reduce that type of stuff? The second part to your question was, like, you know, how do you build teams to support that? I'm a big believer that your team has to be, I'm also a very transparent leader. I don't like to hold anything. Like, you know, I feel like whatever I know, I share with my team. Mm-hmm. So anything that, and doesn't matter, sensitive or not, I feel like the team deserves to know, good or bad. So I always, like, so that's one thing I employ with my teams, where I feel like I gain their trust. I have trust within my team, where their teams trust me and I trust their ability to be able to execute where we would like to be. So I was about to say, like, so the teams, like, the situation, especially if it's a turnaround situation, you know, you have to have alignment within your team. There's no way around it, because we don't have that time, or we don't have any room for any, you know, any drama, so to speak. Like, you know, it's like everybody has to be aligned, everybody has to be focused, and because we have to execute. Mm-hmm. If we don't, then the company will be in deeper trouble than it is currently. So I look at, like, in my team, I look at, like, hey, are all the team members on my team aligned with our objectives, and then are rallying with us together, good or bad? Like, I've done my part. I've shared my pieces of information with you. This is the current situation, and this is what we need to do to execute. And if they're aligned, great. If they're not aligned, maybe this venture is not for them. And more than happy to provide recommendations. And if they're looking for jobs, you know, I mean, it's it's okay. It's okay to be, it hurts the company to have an unhappy employee than to have lesser of happy employees, I feel. So I think I would say like those were like my two pieces of the way at least I build my teams. Make sure like everyone who is on there is aligned, is in there with you for the ride. And then the other one is like, you know, just sharing my very high level objectives. And of course, like that trickles down into tactical stuff, like lower level objectives, but depending on what team they are in.
I think it's interesting. You shared, and I would call it, it's like a different version of a tenet that I always follow, which is that I ask my staff to be honest with me because I'll be honest with them. And what I mean by that is like, I mean like really honest, like, hey, look, if you're thinking about looking for another job, tell me. I'm not going to like be mad at you. I'm not going to be upset. If your future is not here, I understand that. And I'm here to help you build that future too. Like we're, you know, like, cause that usually comes back to help you at some point. You know, at some point you're like, you know, I just had a situation where a gentleman who he worked on my team almost 20 years ago, at the beginning of his career, he started, you know, into my IT support. He moved on to other roles, and you know, I connected with him on LinkedIn and some other places. So you know, here in our community is a little smaller here where I live, so I had more contact with him. But then, you know, like 6-7 months ago, the company he was at had a downsizing, and he got laid off. You know, he got pushed out, and I knew that in one of my old roles they were looking for a network admin, and he happens to have network admin experience. You know, and put the two together and stuff like that. So like by even though he left, you know, years ago from the organization that I was at in that team, he moved on to a better opportunity. He was open about the fact that he was looking and everything else. Like that came around to help him in the long run. And, you know, if something happens where there's other leaders or other things like that, like those things always, to me, they always pay dividends. And that usually results in a team that's better. They're better aligned to what I want to see and the performance I want out of them, because they feel like they could be open, and the people will self-select out that need to go, you know, like if, you know, cause like, and I don't mean that in like a super negative way, but if they're not happy, like if they're not happy, we can't make them happy, then let's find a way to get them happy. And even if that is to make them happy somewhere else.
And I totally agree. I think like, so, you know, I, as a leader, I feel like, you know, at least one of my like roles is to ensure like the team is the best version of themselves. And then what can I do to ensure that they are, I can provide them with opportunities to grow, maybe even if it's not vertical growth, if it's horizontal growth, like, you know, broaden their skills. So essentially like what I'm doing is making them marketable in the industry so they can go find another job. That's essentially what like my, but then I think that I feel is so satisfying to me. If they actually truly do, like, I have like tons of examples. Like I've worked with to what you just shared. Like, so I had 10 years ago, I'd worked with someone on my team who decided to pursue other opportunities. We always stayed in touch. Like even, and today I feel so happy. They're doing so much, so well in their careers. And I feel like a lot of it is because, you know, because like they were open to like taking on more and going and finding like better opportunities than what maybe I could have been able to provide them then back then. But who's to say, like, and as I suggested, like if something comes up, you know, those are the first people I would go and ask for, like, hey, are you guys looking for something? You know, because I know that I have that relationship with them.
So this maybe it's probably a question you'll have to, you might have to sit and think about, but you may not. So when people are in their journey from being a contributor to being a leader in the space, whatever space they're in, whether it's IT or any other things, usually there's a time you could put your finger on where you're like, you know what? That was when I realized that I was the leader and that I had to execute as a leader. And like it was, you know, it's like an event, a project, this like one day when I was like, oh my God, like I'm the one they're all looking at or whatever the case may be. Like, what was that for you? Like, how did that come about? Can you think about that? Or like,
I let me think. Like, so I think I would say, like, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, right? You know, mm-hmm. when you look back, it's like, oh yeah, that point in my life. Like, so I feel, I would say was even before I started working, I feel like maybe there's like a small leadership glimpse I can. I used to be a competitive table tennis player.
This is gonna this will get into the things people didn't know about you part of the interview, but now we're gonna preview that.
So I'm back home. Like, even like I still play, but not as much. But I used to play a lot when I was when I was younger, back in my college days, school days.
So you can still smoke all of us, is what you're saying.
Maybe, but like I haven't picked up a paddle in a while, so it's it may take me some time to get warmed up. I think it was like one of those times when we were competing in a tournament, and I was in my eighth grade, I believe. Like I was very young, eighth or ninth grade, I don't know, it's something like that. I was in school. There were a time where, like, you know, it just felt like it was a group. It was what we call a team event. So, you know, if one person wins, the team doesn't win. So everybody has to win certain time to beat their own individual. So I feel it was once where, I don't know, I was still young, but I took the time to sit down and coach and train people. And maybe that was my brief glimpse into leadership, like where being, even though it was in my eighth grade, I had this thing in me where I felt, I was a good player, and I felt like, hey, if I could impart this knowledge to these people, like to my team, maybe they can do better than what they're doing now. I think that was like the start, I would say, like my brief glimpse of leadership. But then eventually, once you start working, there were times where I felt like, guys, like I feel like I know what I can do. Like, if I can take my skills and distribute it amongst like 10 other people, you know, the team could do so much better, so much more. And I think that sort of happened, I would say, like sometime when I started working at Jenny Craig, or maybe a little before that, where I had that, I would say those were probably the two turning points in my life where I felt I have a bit of leadership in me. And then eventually, when I started seeing results of that, and I felt more and more satisfied doing that, and then eventually you know, developed into who I am today. And I still use those leadership principles, making sure the team's happy, ensuring everyone's successful, your employees are happy. I think those are sort of basics that I still follow. Doesn't matter, like, company, whatever company you're in, I think those principles always you take with you.
So I'll pick a different fun topic, because we talked about your table tennis career. So that is definitely something that people would not expect. That is an awesome story. So I'm glad you shared that. Thank you. Star Wars or Star Trek, or neither?
You know, the people ask me this, and I'm neither. I haven't seen any of the Star Wars or the Star Trek. And my team members give me a hard time for this. Like, how can you be techie? And I would see either one of them. I'm like, that's not what happened. But if I watch both, I would probably, I don't know, I like movies in general, so I would probably watch all of them.
My older son, well, both my sons watch Star Trek with me. I'm a Star Trek person more than a Star Wars person. They're both good, before we, you know, get flamed on the internet here. But my older son is very much into watching. So he watched, you know, most nights of the week, he'd say, hey, can we watch an episode? We're working our way through through Star Trek The Next Generation currently. And the amount of there was a graphic I saw a couple months ago, the amount of like content that's available in Star Trek, like because it was a TV show that was produced weekly more than a movie, you know, a set of movies first. There's like almost like 1,000 hours of content to consume in the Star Trek universe versus something like, you know, I don't know, like 150 or 200 hours worth of content to consume in the Star Wars universe right now. Wow. It's like an order of magnitude different because of just the way they were produced. You know, Star Wars was just movies. And then only recently have they started doing some of these series in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years and stuff like that. But yeah, like, I don't know. It's funny. You mentioned about being neither. I get this from my wife sometimes too, because she'll be like, "Hey, you watched this movie?" And I'll be like, "No, I haven't seen that movie." And she's like, "What? How were you alive in the 1980s? Like, how are you?"
It seems like I have a lot of catching up to do. Like 1,150. Like, there's a lot of hours that I need to catch up on. Seems like.
Yeah, if you're gonna watch the Star Trek universe, you're definitely making a commitment if you're gonna get through it all. That's for sure. And it's good. Like, now I'm just gonna sell you on Star Trek for a few minutes, but like certain shows that were less popular when they came out, upon rewatch and like popular understanding, you know, revisiting of them, like Star Trek Enterprise, which was a series that showed up in the early 2000s. It had Scott Bakula, who is best known as the guy from the TV show Quantum Leap in the 1990s. And in that show at the time was less popular. It only lasted 5 seasons instead of 7, like the other ones, the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. Mm-hmm. But and some of it was like, at the time it was like, this isn't the same story, or it's a rehash of the original Star Trek and just told in a different way, or whatever the case may be. But when I rewatched it, I was like, man, these stories are good. And like, there's been more recent, like contemporary commentary to look at that and like reflect and be like, this was quite good. Even, you know, it holds up well, I guess, over time.
Got it.
Like the stories and stuff like that. So there you go. Like if you got a spare 1,000 hours in your life, you can go watch Star Trek universe.
I have to start like right now.
That's right.
After this fall, maybe you can start catching up.
Yeah, you could judge for yourself, I guess, after you're done. So coming back to the leadership aspects here of the mm-hmm. of the podcast, and we're kind of coming up on the end of our episode today. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have to give to people who are either coming up or other leaders in the space and things like that? I want to frame this slightly. Mm-hmm. Being in private equity, you see a lot of companies. We didn't talk deeply about this, but I know this because we talked a little before we got on the episode here. You know, you're an operating advisor. Is that what it is? So yes, your job is to go in and give strategic advice to companies in the your private equity firms are looking at either acquiring or part of their portfolio and stuff like that. So you are constantly interfacing with people and having to give them advice about leadership, about strategy, about execution and stuff like that. So love to hear some thoughts from you about like what advice you would give to people.
So I would say, every company is different. So you always go in with an open mind. A lot of companies are very mature. Some companies are not, are still growing or budding in their processes and in their growth process. So I would say like you should, step one, as a technologist, always stay close to technology, keep learning, keep growing. When you go in, keep an open mind, think of it as a blank canvas, and think of it as if you did not have anything, how would you approach this implementing technology here in a specific company or just in general? Don't go based with this bias in your mind that, hey, I need to go with a certain platform or a certain tool, like just because you have expertise with it. Every company is different. As I said, like, you know, they're doesn't have to be the most expensive tool that needs to go in there. It has to be the right fit with the organization. So that I would say like is one of the key aspects of being in and of getting to interact with so many different companies. You know, your approach has to be catered to what the company needs, not based on what you know. I would say the second thing is like, you know, hard work. It's all hard work. You just, you know, elbow grease, get in there, like doesn't matter. Like big or small task, like, you know, doesn't matter what title, you have to be in there with the team because the company needs it, especially in a private equity backed companies. Every company needs your help. Doesn't matter how big or small the task is. So doesn't matter if you have a team of 80 or 100 or 5 people, you just go in and then sit down with them. And, you know, that also makes them feel that a leader is involved in problem solving with them and not just they're left by themselves to and to fend for themselves. I think I would say those would be the top two things that come to mind. Never stop learning. Ensure, you know, you're there. to help and support in however shape or form the company needs you.
Thanks. Great. Thank you. Yash, thank you so much for investing your time today on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Again, I enjoyed this conversation, Doug. I appreciate it.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm Doug Kameen, and we look forward to coming to you on our next episode.